So Prabhupada writes in conclusion to this purport that all the contradictions that appear in the scriptures, they are all apparent contradictions. They are not real contradictions at all. If only one understands the Lord as He is, then there is no room for any contradiction. The Vedic literatures are so vast, like an ocean. They are not only voluminous, they are also very grave and deep. So, one is very likely to end up in contradictions and not come to know the absolute truth without the help of a spiritual master. Even if one were to have a book, some Vedic book, Upanishad or Vedas or Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, one may not be able to ascertain the truth oneself. Just like in a tonic bottle, you find is written there as directed by the physician. You cannot, like sometimes the devotee buys this cough syrup. It's very tasty. So sometimes the devotee, in the name of having cough, he wants to drink 2-3 bottles in 2 days. And it's very nice smelling. That's why it's written there, as directed by the physician. Otherwise, a man, when he bought a syrup bottle, some other syrup he bought for his wife. So it was written, shake well before use. So his wife was lying in the bed, he picked her up and started shaking her whole body. She was screaming, she said, I am so sick and you are making me more sick. But he said, it's written here, shake well before use. So, sometimes, you know, even if you read the Vedas and read a shloka, it's written here. Still we can misunderstand it without being directed by a physician. So we need a guru, doctor to help us. Like, you know, there are contradicting descriptions about the Supreme Truth in some places as impersonal, some places as personal in the scriptures. So one may not be able to arrive at a conclusion oneself. Which of the two is true? One can get, there is a statement in the Upanishads. Apanipado javano grihita achakshu. It says apanipado javano. Javan means food. Apani means without having hand. Apanipado javano grihita. The Supreme Lord without proper having hands, he is able to grab lot of quantities of food, which is Jagannath. Jagannath, if you see, he has only half hands. But how much food he eats? None of us can eat so much. It's chapan bog, isn't it? So, the absolute truth has spiritual hands, he has spiritual legs, as Krishna himself says in that verse, sarvata pani padam tat sarvato akshi shiromukha. So, one can get confused. Here, Krishna says, sarvata pani padam tat, my hands are everywhere, legs are everywhere, face is everywhere, head is everywhere, my ears are everywhere, eyes are everywhere, he says. Another place it is said, absolute truth has no hands, legs, head. So, then one may be confused which of the two is true. Actually, both are true. From a material point of view, Lord has no form. From a spiritual point of view, he has a form. Like this verse in Bhagavad Gita, kavim puranam anushasitaram anoraniyam samanusmaridya sarvasya dhataram achintya rupam. See, the word rupam is used there. Achintya rupam means he has an inconceivable form. That he has a form. So, in order to reconcile the Vedic statements, one will need the shelter of a guru to understand how God is personal, but he is not personal like, he is not having a body like you, ours. He is a spiritual body. So, when you read across the scriptures, also we find many contradictions amongst even the devotees who are hearing. Arjuna, while hearing from Krishna, even he felt a contradiction in his understanding. In the 3rd chapter and 5th chapter, you will find. Actually, Krishna told Arjuna, so much preaching Krishna did. And then Krishna told him to renounce everything. And Arjuna decided, now I will renounce everything and go to forest. And then Krishna told him, now you pick up your bow and arrow and start fighting. At that time, Arjuna got confused. Krishna, what do you want me to do? You know, you are telling me to do two opposite things. You are telling me to renounce and you are telling me to fight. Which of the two am I supposed to do? I am getting confused. Like the third chapter he told the verse. What is that? Vyamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohayasivame tadekam vadanishchitya yena shreyonum apniyam. Shreyonum apniyam. He says, please tell me one thing, Krishna. Don't tell me two things. Either you tell me to fight or you tell me to renounce. Don't tell me to do both. When Krishna heard it, for Krishna there was no confusion. Krishna, in fact, told in the fifth chapter, he says, Sankhya Yoga Pratakbal, he says, people who think renunciation and working in devotion are two different things, he says, they are, he's calling them as Bala. Bala means like kids. They are like kids. They don't know what is true religion. These two are same things, he's saying. Renunciation and working in devotion. Then he explains to Arjuna how it is. There is no contradiction in what I said, he says. See, renunciation, karma sannyas, means what? Inactivity. So the Shastras say, either you be inactive, giving no engagement to your senses. That is called karma sannyas. Or you can engage your senses in devotion, which is called as working in devotion. You can do either of the two. And Krishna told Arjuna that working in devotion is better than renunciation. So you do work in devotion. So what is the meaning of this? For example, if you tell a student that, you know, stop all mischievous activity. Don't do anything. In fact, that implies that you have to properly do your duty. You know, do reading, writing, paying attention to the class. It's implied when you say, don't act mischievously. Stop acting mischievously. It's implied in that. But if a student stops acting mischievously, but instead, you know, he goes to sleep or something, then the purpose is not served. He hasn't understood the purpose. Is it not true? So working in devotion means acting properly. And renunciation means stopping mischievous activities. That's the meaning. They both are connected. So Krishna said, I am telling you to renounce. But when I am telling you to renounce, I am not telling you to renounce and go to forest. But I am telling you to act only for my pleasure. When I am working only for God's pleasure. So that's what Krishna clarifies. Subsequently you will read. He explains very nicely. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukkam aptum ayotak. He says, simply renunciation will not do. You have to work in devotion. See, the Shastra's first present contradiction puts us to thinking deeply. And when we cannot sort it out, then they give explanation after that. And then when you get the explanation, you understand, oh, the contradiction is resolved completely. So, in the same manner, if you see Isha Upanishad, there are so many contradictions explained. In fact, Prabhupada says the contradictions, they prove the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. Sometimes, you know, students think they are so smart that they can even challenge God. So many stories. Like, you know, one man went to God and asked him, my dear God, you have got so much wealth. All over the world I heard that the wealth that people possess all belongs to you. And Lord said, yes, it is true. I have millions and millions and billions of gold coins. God said, oh really? I also heard everything about you is great. Even, you know, our time is very limited and your time is very great. And God said, yes, you know, what is 1 minute for me? Like, you know Mahavishnu? One exhalation, inhalation. What is 1 minute for me is millions and millions of years for the living beings. Then the man said, oh God, if you say... Actually, he thought in his mind, for 1 paisa of God is equal to millions of gold coins in this world. So please give me 1 paisa, he said. And God told him, wait a minute. God told him, wait for 1 minute. Because... And you have to wait for 1 minute for 1 minute of God, you have to wait how many years? Isn't it? You have to wait millions of years. So God always has, God is always ahead of even the atheists, who may, like, you know, some atheistic people want to put a paradoxical question to checkmate the atheistic people. They ask, you know, can God lift a stone? Can God create a stone which he himself cannot lift? This is a very common question. So either way you go, you will be defeated. If you say yes, God can create, oh, that means he cannot lift a stone. That means if he cannot lift a stone, he is impotent, they will say. Or you go to the other side and say, no. How can God not lift anything? God can lift anything. In fact, he lifted Govardhan Hill. So there is nothing that God cannot lift. There is no weight God cannot lift. You say, then what they will say? Oh, that means he cannot create. That means he lacks in, you know, creative potency. So either way, they think, you know, it's a checkmating question, which actually it is not. So in Ishopanishad, the Lord says, tat ejati, tannayajati, tad dure, tad antike. See, the contradictions are explained there. The Lord is very near. Radha Kunjiberi, when you are dressing, you can touch his lotus feet. Yeah. He is so near, you can apply a tulasi with a sandalwood pulp on his feet. So you can touch God's feet. He is so near to you. But yet, he is not so near for an unconscious fool. If one is unconscious in decorating the deity, dressing the Lord, having a proper consciousness, then the Lord is far away for a non-devotee. That's what he said, Lord is Goloka Divasati. He lives in Goloka, but Akhilatma Bhuto. He is also there in the entire material world, in every atom. So, God is very near and he is far away for a non-devotee. For a devotee, he is very, very near, he says. Similarly, he says, Lord walks and does not walk. How can somebody walk and not walk? Like you see, the deity does not walk, he stands in one place. But the Lord also walks. Like you see, when Lord Krishna was walking, who was chasing after him? Kalayavana. Was chasing after him. Kalayavana was running, Krishna was walking. Still he could not catch Krishna. The demigods are also having a running race along with Krishna. You know this? Anejadekam manaso daviyo, and that verse says. So in the running race with demigods, Krishna is the one who wins, but without running. He only walks. And they all are running as fast as possible, but he wins. So that is why it is said, tat ejati, tat naijati, tat naijati, tat dure, tat antike. Antike means inside our heart he is situated as Antaryami, and outside he is situated as Virata Purusha. He is in both the places. In the same manner, can God lift a stone which he cannot, can God create a stone which he cannot lift? The answer to this question is yes. Now immediately when the atheist will ask you, okay, you see, that means he cannot lift something. Yes, there are things which he cannot lift, there are things which he can lift. What he cannot lift? Nanda Baba's sandals are difficult for him to lift. Or sometimes Yashoda Maya tells Krishna to bring some bartan from the kitchen. He tries to go and shake it. He can't even shake it. He can't even just move a vessel, but he can lift Govardhan Hill with his tiny finger. See, Krishna makes such questioners thorough fools by the way he behaves, isn't it? He makes a fool out of them completely. So, Prabhupada says, all the contradictions can be resolved in Krishna only. All the complexity and complex contradictions can be resolved very easily while dealing with Krishna. So, in the Christian tradition, there is a statement, many are called, some are chosen. So this is a statement in Bible. So many of the youths in America ask a question. They say that, you know, when you are born, at the time of your birth, some people are condemned to go to hell. And some people are, you know, blessed to attain salvation. So salvation or condemnation, this is like a predestined impression in your mind, and accordingly either you go to hell or you go to heaven. This is the understanding many Christians have in the West also, based on this type of statement, many are called, some are chosen. So when you see the Christian tradition, sometimes it doesn't elaborate on, you know, this kind of questions which are very vital for people. Like many college students, when they hear these statements, you know, they say, I am what I am. Like you see, some people, they like to label themselves as a bad person. In fact, they think there is some kick they get by being bad. You should appear crazy, you should speak crazy, you should speak vulgar words and you should be notorious amongst people as a very famous bad person. Yeah. And people lie. Actually, when I was studying an IIT, it's very common to see somebody having only one big kundal, no, 1 year only. Yeah. Or they will, you know, shave only one side of the hair or something like that. Yeah. Or sometimes the boy would be wearing a dress which looks like a female, you know, completely colorful, all kinds of colors, you know. It looks like a sari, but he's putting a dress like that. You'll find. Or sometimes you see somebody's hair starts from here up to long, keep long hair. So they want to look different, they want to appear different, and they are very proud of being bad. And they say, you know, this is how God made me. I am a born devil. They say like that. There are people like that. And this is a very, very big wrong conception, because the reason for this is they think that there are some people who are blessed right from birth to be divine. And they are all people who will attain salvation and go to God. That is their prerogative. They think like that. But when you refer to our scriptures, Krishna very clearly says, what he says? Name dveshyosti na priyaha. What is that verse? Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti na priyaha. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mayi te teshu chapyaham. He says, I am impartial. He says, I am not partial to anyone. Name dveshyosti na priyaha. No one is dear to me, and no one is, I am not having any aversion for anybody or attachment to anybody. Completely Krishna declares his impartiality. Even in the Vedanta Sutra, there is a verse which says, na sapekshatvat darshayati. This says, the Lord doesn't appear, the Lord is actually impartial, but he appears to be partial, it says. So what is this, appears to be partial? He appears partial. Here, many contradictions can be spoken in this connection. This is one statement of Vedanta Sutra. There are many things which Lord appear to be doing which actually are not true. Like the first thing, we can present the contradiction. Those who are asuras, the Lord appears to be envious of them. And those who are suras, the Lord seems to be favorable to them. Even Hiranyakashipu blamed Vishnu that you are like a child leaning towards the mother. You are leaning towards the demigods always. And you are pampering them. And when asuras come, you kill them. So, Hiranyakashipu put a blame on the Lord, saying that you are partial. Like that. Not only Hiranyakashipu, many asuras have blamed the Lord for being partial. He appears to be partial. But here it says in the second line. What is the second line it says? E bhajante tu mam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyaham. Why am I appearing partial? Because when my devotees serve me, I reciprocate with them. And that reciprocation is seen to be partial. So, there was a question asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj in the 7th canto, 1st verse, in the beginning. What is the chapter? Supreme Lord is equal to all. In that chapter. Yudhishthira is asking, why Krishna seems to be partial while dealing with demons? He is killing the demons like Shishupal and is favoring devotees like Pandavas. So, then Narada explains that. Very important point. He says, we are all called embodied beings. We are all called as the embodied souls means who are trapped in the three modes. We surely see some people as enemies in our lives. We see some people as friends. Like, you know, whom do you call as an enemy? If somebody doesn't pamper my senses, he is my enemy. Or somebody insulted me, he is my enemy. Somebody pointed out my mistake, he is my enemy. Or I hate somebody. And all of you think for a moment, you know, sometimes we create enmity, and that enmity remains as an impression for a very long time. It doesn't just go away very easily. You know, it's like a deep impression in the mind. That is the proof of our conditioned nature. Actually, it is impossible for Krishna to have enmity with anybody like that. He just cannot have enmity at all. The reason is, Narada explains, that when one is Trigunatit, when one is beyond the three gunas, he has no enmity with anybody. He has no enmity with anybody, and he has no friendship with anybody. He is neutral completely. The reason is nobody can harm him. For example, sometimes parents say, "Hey, your uncle is living somewhere in the north. You go and keep some touch with him because he's an MLA or MP." People say, and if you keep in touch, or one of your uncles, you know, he's living in America, keep in touch. Later on, if you want to go for higher studies, he will help you. People in this world are very calculative. They always think, how can some benefit be achieved from somebody? So they make friendships for gaining favor. Similarly, sometimes they say, oh, this family, you know, they are envious of us, we have enmity with them. You know, keep distance. Even if you see, don't talk to them. Don't do any favor to them. Clear demarcation of friendship and enmity in this world can be seen. Whereas, we find in Lord's case, after all, every living being is his own part and parcel. You know, Lord has no enmity at all. Even while killing demons, Krishna doesn't feel enmity at all. Even while killing Shishupal, even while, like we find, Lord has killed so many demons. Prabhupada explains it is like the strong slap of a mother for a child who is going in the wrong path. Prabhupada says in one lecture, God is like a father who gives toys to his children. He gives one toy to one child, another toy to another child. But when one child tries to pull the toys of the other children, like America, for example, wants to loot oil from Gulf. So, they have superficially presented some excuse in the newspapers why they are having a war with Gulf. But everyone knows why they are having a war. Actually, the reason for the war they are presenting is very superficial. But the underlying reason for the war is once you capture Gulf, then they can have oil unlimitedly. Like that. So, it's like one child trying to pull the... Now, one American has made a statement. He says that the oil doesn't belong to Gulf. The oil belongs to God, he's saying. Now the Gulf people can say, the dollar doesn't belong to America, dollar belongs to all. Because Lord is Lakshmipati, no? They can also say that, isn't it? So they will only call God when they want to use God for their own purpose. So, now, when one wants to enjoy, one may want to loot the other children's toys also. Because that kind of enmity is there in this world. And then what Supreme God, what he does? Then he may slap one of the children. Hey, don't take his toy. You keep your toy and he will keep his toy. Sometimes the parents sometimes do give a slap. Same thing Krishna does when he deals with demigods and demons. Now demigods, actually I haven't read anywhere that demigods are looting the property of demons. If they do, then they will also get punishment. You will see that. Nalakur Manigri were doing something wrong. And they get a punishment also for that. Indra did something wrong, you know. And he became a Sahasralochan, you know. He also got a punishment for that. Actually, Sahasralochan appears to be a very sweet name. But actually, that is a great blemish on Indra. You know, all over the body, having thousands of eyes, everyone is going to ask him, how you got so many eyes? You know. Actually, imagine if somebody is running in the road with thousands of eyes in their body. First of all, people all will move to the side out of fear. So, actually, Indra was cursed to get the yoni of a woman in his body, thousands. That's what Gautama actually cursed him to get. And Indra felt so bad. He fell at the feet of Gautama and said, if I go like this, I can't show my face to anyone. I can't come out of my palace. Please kindly give me an alternative curse. Then he was given this curse. That all over your body you will have thousands of eyes. Like that. Anyway, Indra tolerated that. Still he was a bit ashamed having thousands of eyes in his body for misbehaving with Gautama's wife. But later on in Gaur Leela, the thousands of eyes came to help for taking darshan of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And in one of the past times we read, Indra was considering his thousand eyes very fortunate. So he can behold darshan. If one eye is closing, another can be watching darshan nicely. Anyway, the point is, if demigods commit blunder, then Lord punishes them also. It's not that they are spared. But in general, we find the demons are the ones who usurp demigods' property. And the Lord comes like Vamandev, and he picks up all the kingdom of demigods and gives it back to demigods. That's what he does. You will find every time the Lord comes, he actually ensures that the proprietorship is with those who propagate Brahminical culture or Vedic culture, or those who help the living beings to attain their ultimate goal of life, salvation or self-realization or going back to Godhead. So, used to Maharaj's question was very brilliant. The Lord seems to be like partial to Shishupal or envious of Shishupal. But the Lord's behavior may appear so, externally. Now, one example of envy I was telling you. Like a mother, sometimes beating a child may appear that the mother is actually angry. But the mother is actually, no matter how angry she is, she's not eager to inflict pain on the child. Her goal is not that. Her goal is what? Is a mother eager to see the child suffering and crying? Is that her goal? What is her goal? To see the child rectify his wrong behavior. That is Krishna's goal also while dealing with the demons. You will find Lord Ram telling to the monkeys when Vibhishan was about to come. Lord Ram said, even if Ravana comes now and surrenders Sita to me, I will not kill him. I will spare his life. You know, when Sugriva heard this, there were tears in his eyes. He said, my dear Lord, you know, while talking to you are asking all of us monkeys, you know, what should we do with Vibhishan? You know, I told you that, you know, don't entertain Vibhishan. Let us immediately catch him and kill him right away. We should not entertain him in our party. But after hearing you, I feel my heart has started softening. And understanding your eternal principle of how you offer shelter to your devotees. So, the Lord is so broad-minded that he is willing to give shelter to even demons also. Like Maya Danava. He took shelter of Arjuna and Krishna, and Krishna spared his life. And you will find like that. Some demons spared by Krishna. So demon is no more a demon if he surrenders to God. Prahlad is born in a demoniac family. He is no more a demon. Vibhishan is born in a demoniac family. So the demoniac behavior has to be seen, not demoniac birth. Demoniac behavior. That is what is condemnable and Krishna condemns. So the contradiction is resolved like that. Same way some people say, why are you flattering the Lord? Why you people have to so much? In fact, this question was asked by one of the boys in Utkarsh camp, Mayapur. He asked, you know, we are chanting all God's names and God is very happy that we are chanting. Is God not very proud? Is God not demanding that all over the world people have to chant his names? And by hearing the people chanting names and people surrendering to him, God feels very happy and satisfied. Prabhupada explains this in one place, one of his purports. He says that the Lord and his devotee are reciprocally, they reciprocally love one another. The Lord does not demand anything material. And the devotee does not demand anything material from the Lord also. They are reciprocally engaged in loving and serving one another. That's all. A devotee is never attracted to anything material from the Lord at all. It is pure love. So you see from this platform, and then Prabhupada explains, in this world also we like to be praised by somebody. Is it not true? Now where does the tendency come from? He says. And then he says, this originally is there in the Lord. The Lord likes to hear his glories from his devotees. And the Lord also speaks the glories of his devotee with his own mouth also. So they are reciprocally, they have this nature, eternally. But the glorification of the Lord is real and glorification of living beings in this world is false. Is it not true? Like for example, a man was working, working in a State Bank of India, you know. There he was working as a cleaner, one who takes a jadu and cleans and everything. But one day he was standing in a bus stop with coat, suit, tie and everything. Somebody asked him, sir, where are you working? He said, I'm working in SBI, working in State Bank of India. So people thought maybe he is manager or maybe he must be deputy manager at least. Yeah. People are thinking, is it true or false that he is working with SBI? It is true. But what is he trying to present himself as? He wants to appear himself, like sometimes when a boy wants to marry a particular girl, sometimes they borrow a very big car in rent. Huh? Yeah. Sometimes they wear a very nice dress, coat, shoe, tie, everything, till he gets the girl. And after he gets the girl will come to know that this fellow even borrowed a blazer, everything in rent only. He doesn't have money to buy a blazer also. You know, he gets a car and rent, and coat, suit and rent. And some people, you know, who are surrounding him, he got those people also on rent. Huh? Everything. You know, this is called a dumba. Huh? Dumba means show off. Huh? And when such a boy is expecting some praises from you, that is false praise. That is simply flattery. Like, you know, one of our Shaydi Prabhu took me to one rich man's house, and that rich man has appointed one man only to flatter him. And that man keeps on praising this fellow. When we went, every 2 minutes he tells some praises about him. You know, he was going on glorifying. Then after the whole discussion was over while going, then Shaydi Prabhu said, this fellow is appointed fellow for praising him. Monthly gets salary for that. He was telling. So people appoint servants for praising them. As somebody who actually doesn't, you know, they praise him with so many things which are actually not true. They just flatter a person. You understand what is flattery? Chapalusi, they call it. Flattery. Which is actually not true. But when you praise a person about something that is genuine about him, that is not contempt at all. Like devotees glorify Krishna. Paramambyo mahateja, paramambyo mahattapaha, paramambyo mahatbrahma, paramambya parayanam, pavitranam, pavitram yo mangalanam cha mangalam, daivatam devanatanam cha bhutanam yo vyayapita. All this is true. He is the father of all living entities. He is supremely pure. He is supremely potent. He is the creator of everything. He is a supreme purifier. Everything is true. And when devotees glorify, why Krishna feels joy? He feels joy that the living entity has come back to his original position. He has come back to his original position. And he is now, you know, free from all the misgivings. And the devotee also, and Krishna praises the devotee also. As we say, Lord Chaitanya used to praise his devotees as if he had five mouths. He said, so praising the Lord, or the Lord praising the devotee, is enacted on a platform of love, pure love. In that pure loving exchange, there is no impurity there at all. There is no... See, in this world, when you tell something about yourself, people say, hey, why are you so egoistic? They ask, So what ego is that? It is called false ego. Why it is false ego? For example, if I do something great in this world, and I claim that I was the first one who introduced a supercomputer in entire India, if I say like that. Yes, you may be the first one, but who gave you the brain? You can ask. Even Einstein didn't create his own brain. God gave him the brain. Nor can Einstein create other scientists' brain. Can he? He can't. Or after death, can Einstein's brain be preserved and put into the head of another scientist and the brain can continue to function? No. So God gave Einstein the brain. So naturally, when you do great things, we have to give the credit to God. Is it not true? That is when Karma Yoga it is explained, before doing the work, we have to pray to God. Please give me the Shakti, Buddhi, everything to do this work. And while doing the work, we have to be conscious that I am functioning with all my sensory apparatuses, empowered by Krishna. And after finishing the work, we have to give the credit to Krishna. It's all Krishna's mercy. Guru's mercy, this could happen so nicely. So, in case a person takes credit, that is called false ego. But when the credit is given to Krishna, it is never false ego. It is a reality. Because ultimately, he is like the source or, powerhouse from where everyone is getting all Shakti. So, glorifying Krishna to be the doer, ultimate doer, is actually the right glorification. It's not a wrong glorification. Glorifying any other living entity as the source of everything is a wrong glorification. That is why when the living entity, also you see in this world, people flatter others. Why? They have some motivation. Like why do people flatter others? There is some kind of, you know, expectation people have in their heart. But when pure devotees, Prabhupada says, pure devotees are not a mercantile community, Prabhupada says. They are not a mercantile community. So three types of people Prabhupada says. The most unfortunate people are like the blind people who cannot even understand God. And more fortunate are those who go to God for some favors. And they are, Prabhupada says, they are partially fortunate. And then pure devotee is fully fortunate, Prabhupada says. Because he goes to God without any expectation. He just wants to love Him, serve Him. That's all. So, the devotee is like calling Krishna's name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare. So, in our liberated stage, calling Krishna's name is very nectarian for the living entity's ears, in the purified stage. Even a mother likes to call the child's name so many times. You can ask any mother, when they call the child's name, how they feel. They feel like you know, one South Indian poet, his name is Subramanya Bharati. He wrote a poem. He says, Sendamidnadennum podinile in batten vandu paayidu kaadenile. He's saying, when I say Tamil Nadu, this word, I feel as if somebody is pouring nectar in my ears. He's saying. See, I think you may have some poem in Maharashtra same way. Somebody says, Jai Maharashtra. Immediately nectar is pouring in somebody's ears. So why he is feeling like this? Because he is attached to his state. Isn't it? So in the conditioned stage, if mother is calling the child's name, she feels as if some nectar is poured in her ear. She feels such kind of joy. So either one is attached to the child or the state or the Mera Bharat Mahan country. Things like that. Or caste or whatever. But the ultimate is, when one says Hare Krishna, then one feels nectar is flowing in one's ears. That is the purest stage. So why the living entity is called Krishna's name? Not because it is their duty to do. Do you think all living beings in the spiritual world call, no, we have come to spiritual world, if we don't call Krishna's name, He will send us out. Do you think they are chanting because of that? No. They love to chant Krishna's names. They want to chant Krishna's names without even being told to do. It is natural for them. Similarly, Krishna also, He calls the cows by the name, devotees by the name. Even all of you, if somebody calls you by your name, immediately become alert. Isn't it? Who called me? And especially if someone whom you love very much, they call you, and that is even more relishable to your ears. So Krishna is our ultimate object of love. He is calling the names of devotees, or devotees calling His names. So both are enacted on a spiritual plane, and there is no false ego in it. Completely it is devoid of false ego. So we should know, devotees don't flatter Krishna for any material commodity. They are not a mercantile community, Prabhupada says. So in this way, Prabhupada very beautifully, when he talks about Krishna's characteristics and nature, it's very important for us to understand these things from Prabhupada's lectures on Queen Kunti. Beautifully Prabhupada explains. First, as I told you, Krishna is not envious. Krishna is not partial. Krishna is not eager to receive flattery from His devotees. Actually, Krishna hates flattery. If somebody comes to, you know, praise Krishna for some material commodity, Krishna immediately understands it. He doesn't like it at all. That is the reason, you see, Duryodhana comes to flatter Krishna to get some army from Him. That doesn't touch Krishna's heart at all. That's why it's very difficult to please Krishna, because we have to have this Anyabhilashita Shunyam platform to please Him. On the other hand, it is very easy to please Krishna also. You see, what is this verse? Na ham vedair, na tapasa, na dhanena, na cha ijjaya, shakya eva vidodashtam drishtavana simamyata. He is saying, you cannot attend me by Vedas, Vedic study, by tapasya, by giving charity, and by worship, all these things you cannot attain me. And it appears as if, you know, oh, no one can attain Krishna. And then he immediately he says, next verse, what he says? Bhaktya tu ananyaya shakya ahamevam vidorjuna. There another verse, ananya cheta satam. That verse he says, tasya aham sulabha. I am very easy to be attained. Again the contradiction. Lord is para, Lord is sulabha. Lord is very difficult to approach, is very sulabha. Difficult for whom? For one who is trying to impress him with something artificial. And Lord is very easy to attain. By whom? By one who has natural devotion. Or genuine devotion. One who doesn't try to trick Krishna. So, further Prabhupada explains also that, what is that verse? Kunti's famous verse. Naveda kaschid bhagavam shikirshitam taveha manasya nrinam vidambanam nayasya kaschid dayatosti karhichit deshyascha yasmin vishama matir nrinam. Vaishyamyata means partiality. People think you are partial Krishna, you are actually not, she's saying. You follow this. Coming back to that original Christian theology point, no one is condemned at the time of birth. And no one is promised salvation at the time of birth. It's not that we are all chosen souls. We are actually the ones who choose our destiny. Our future is created, carved by our endeavor, our own activities only. That is very, very clear. Krishna says, many places, I am Udhasin, he says. 9th chapter, 9.9. Udhasinavat, he says. I am completely aloof. Nadatte kaschachit papam, nachaivam sukritam vibhuhu. He says, I am not responsible. I have created a system in this world of chaturvaranyam, everything. Karma, vikarma, akarma. You are into this system. And if you do good, you will get good. If you do bad, you will get bad. And I am aloof from the system, Krishna says. You are into the system and whatever way you do. So, these people who think they are born bad, they can become good also. If they want to, they can rise above their bad behavior instead of foolishly imagining that we are condemned to become bad. So, because these people see contradiction in scriptures, that's the problem. Because they don't know how to resolve the contradictions. So Prabhupada's explanations were most appreciated by Americans on these issues which I explained to you just now. Prabhupada very beautifully explained to them how God is all-loving. He doesn't eternally condemn living entities to hell. There is no eternal condemnation. Prabhupada asked the question, even an ordinary father gives you a second chance to prove yourself. How can God, the Supreme Father, give only one chance? That in this life, if you are a sinner, then you are condemned to hell forever. Simply, it's foolishness. Actually, this was done by one king, Constantinople. His wife had 7 paramours. And then one day, she heard the priest in the court singing from the Bible. And she was shocked to know there is something called Punarjanam. Life after death. She was shocked. She said, really? And then the priest was telling, yes, there is life after death and many, many more lives. One after another, a series of lives. And for all your good and bad acts, you will get reactions later. So, immediately, she told the priest, remove these sections from Bible. Because, she was afraid that she will get the reaction in the subsequent lives and she will continue. Also, Constantinople had another reason. He saw that if you tell people that there are many lives, then they'll become complacent now. And then they will say, agle janam mein dekha jayega. Some people say, like one time, Shamanath was giving a lecture somewhere in one village. I happened to be there. So he was telling, we are living in Kali Yuga. And Kali Yuga is so bad. What are the problems? Kala, Vasmin, Yuge, Jana, and everything. The whole lecture was elaborating on the difficulties and, problems in Kali Yuga. And then Shamanpur said, now I will tell you the glory of Kali Yuga. He said, even devatas are queuing up. They want to take birth in Kali Yuga. And they want to come and take birth, this and that, everything. He was telling, glorifying. And then he asked, how many of you want to take to Krishna consciousness and go back to Godhead? And a few people raised a hand. And Shamanpur surprised one boy in the front, he didn't raise his hand. Then he asked him, what about you? You don't want to take to Krishna consciousness now? He said, अगले कलयुग आएगा ना, नहीं वैसे लेंगे. एनीवे नेक्स्ट कलयुग विल कम, वी विल सी, आई विल बी टेकिंग बर्थ अगेन. सो कॉन्स्टेंट नोबल थॉट दैट यू नो इफ यू टेल पीपल अबाउट मल्टीपल लाइव्स देन दे विल नॉट बिकम सीरियस नाउ. सो ही सेड रिमूव ऑल द सेक्शंस टॉकिंग अबाउट रीइंकार्नेशन. ही ऑल्सो सेड सो बोथ हस्बैंड एंड वाइफ दे रिमूव्ड एवरीथिंग फ्रॉम द बाइबल. So because of which, of course, still there are some traces of reincarnation proofs in Bible. Even today you find. Yeah. So in Bible sometimes you find the statements like eternal condemnation. Prabhupada explained these contradictions from the light of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita very beautifully. So here what is going on, the contradiction that's being spoken here. See, he's saying that he went away from his father's protection, means Vasudeva's protection, to Vraja and lived there incognito. Out of fear of the enemy. Who is the enemy? Kamsa. And although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. Actually, it is said, fear personified fears Krishna. It is said. Huh? What is that word? Samam vimohayati bhirapi yadu bibheti. She is telling. Fear personified fears Krishna. You know this verse? उग्रं वीरं महाविष्णुं ज्वलन्तं सर्वतो मुखं नृसिंहं भीषणं भद्रं मृत्योर् मृत्योर् नमाम्यहं. लॉर्ड नरसिंह गिव्स डेथ टू डेथ. व्हाट इज मीनिंग ऑफ गिविंग डेथ टू डेथ? दैट मीन्स ही पुट्स अ फुल स्टॉप टू डेथ. दैट मीन्स एनीबडी हू बिकम्स अ डिवोटी ऑफ नरसिंह विल नॉट डाई एनी मोर. दिस विल बी हिज लास्ट डेथ. वेन यू क्विट योर बॉडी, then no more birth and death for you. That's the meaning of mrityor, mrityor. And here again another contradiction is explained. He is Narasimham Bhishanam, means he is extremely fierce. Bhadram, most auspicious. You see, the contradiction is resolved only in the Lord. Anyway, in the same manner, can Krishna be fearful of Kamsa? Huh? Is he fearful? Is he afraid of Kamsa, that maybe Kamsa will kill me? Huh? He has no fear. Then why is he fearful? He is fearful out of love for Devaki and Vasudev. Devaki and Vasudev are fearing Krishna's protection out of love for Krishna. And Krishna is pretending to be fearful out of love for Vasudev and Devaki. Of course, Krishna could have told them, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am the source of all creation. Everything emanates from me. So keep quiet, keep me in the jail only. If he told like that, there is no pastime then. There's no Leela. So Lord also, you see, bends himself to please his devotees. Like in Kurukshetra battlefield, you know, imagine just for a moment, you know, the both the armies are arrayed on either side and Krishna takes the Sudarshan Chakra. One Sudarshan Chakra, he finishes all the Kaurava race, Kaurava army completely. Is it difficult for him to do? If he did it, then what would have been the result? No Mahabharata. Mahabharata got finished in one page only. So the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Pandavas and Kauravas were standing, waiting to begin the fight. And Krishna took the Sudarshan Chakra and finished all the Kauravas. And then Pandavas became kings of the world. That's all. So all the other Leelas in between will get cut. Isn't it? But what Krishna does, although he has a Shakti to do, he doesn't do it. Arjuna is telling Krishna, hey, take me in between the armies. And then tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk, Krishna is taking. And he is obeying Arjuna. And so many leelas he does in that battlefield. You know, killing Jayadratha, killing Karna, isn't it? Killing Bhishma. Showing the Vishwarupa Darshan. You know, assisting. And also getting those five arrows. So many. So every one of the leelas that happened in the Kurukshetra battlefield, they teach so many lessons. So Krishna performs his pastime just for the sake of teaching the world so many things. So he is not fearful, but he appears fearful. So the Prabhupada gives an example. Sometimes you all may have experience. In India, people have this experience. Sometimes a child, you know, slaps the mother in the cheeks. You know, sometimes the mother may move away like this. And child slaps like this, he's not able to reach the mother. The mother is sometimes running away. You have seen that? Mother is running away and child is running behind the mother. And the mother runs in such a speed that child will not lose his enthu. See, if mother runs too fast, no? You know, then the child may think, you know, now there is no hope to catch mother. The child may just sit down. But the mother runs at such a speed, so the child will run behind, run behind. At last the child catches the mother and gives a big beating to the mother. And tada, immediately she will fall on the ground. Huh? Sachimata did like this one pastime. It's there in Gaurlila also. You know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Nimai. So he gives one beating on her body. Immediately she falls on the ground as if dead. You know, and child tries to wake her up. He goes this side, that side, pulls the hair, pulls the ears, pulls the nose, and she appears to be dead. And child starts weeping, thinking mother is dead now. Oh, starts crying. Then she wakes up after that. So, why mother does such a thing? Or here purpose is father. Huh? Why they do such a thing? Simply to play with the child. Huh? Simply to please the child, that's all. Huh? In doing this, the mother also, sometimes the mother with a slightly open eye, she is watching the beauty of the child in anxiety. How much anxious the child is. Sometimes the child goes into the kitchen and brings some water to throw in the mother's eyes to wake her up. So, you will find Lakshman is lying, you know, when Indrajit sends that Nagastra, you know, when he's sending that, Lakshman is lying down. Do you think Lakshman really, you know, was defeated by Indrajit? Otherwise, where is the service for Hanuman? If Lakshman is not lying down, then Hanuman is told, go and bring that Sanjeevani, Jadibuti. And he goes, and Hanuman is not able to find that particular Jadibuti. He takes the whole hill, and he flies and brings back. That picture has become immortalized. Everyone appreciates Hanuman doing that great service. So Lord sometimes plays with his devotees, such pastimes. Lord Ram is weeping for Sita, you know, and Lakshman is lying flat on the ground in the battle. So these kind of pastimes are made only to increase the love of the devotees for the Lord. Similarly, Krishna in Vraja is saying that, you know, Krishna ran from Vrindavan to Mathura and Mathura to Dwaraka. Or sometimes you find Lord is called Ranchod. He is leaving the battle and running away to attend to Rukmini. So, unless we hear from pure devotees, we are likely to be mistaken when we read these pastimes. People, you know, like Shishupal was thinking Krishna was a coward boy. He was a simple coward. Actually, Shishupal was telling, look at so many kings who have arrived here. They have so many kingdoms. But look at this Krishna. He's a mere coward boy. He has nothing, he said. Even in Krishna's times, when Krishna appeared in this world, some people didn't know Krishna is God. Only few people know. Karna knew Krishna is God. And Dhritarashtra knew. Bhishma Pitamaha knew. Few personalities knew. Pandavas, they absolutely knew this truth. But in those times, like Shishupal and other vicious kings, they were not aware. For them, Uddhava is feeling distress. Same thing with Kunti also. Kunti is telling, my dear Lord, why do you do... First of all, she is telling, I am surprised how you are found in this material world. You are not supposed to be here. You are supposed to be living in spiritual world. But why are you entering into this dirty place, material world? Why are you coming to this, like for example, imagine one day you find a millionaire in the middle of a slum. There is Jhopadipatti everywhere. People are having dogs outside, they are cooking some food outside, the water is split, you know, spilled over here and there. There is so much of noise, there is fish market, and you find a millionaire, you know, or a president of India or somebody coming and sitting inside the cottage of some poor man. If somebody comes, you may wonder why this person has come here. Such a big man, no, he is not supposed to come to such an area like this. So she is asking, why are you coming to this material world, my dear Lord? What is it verse? She says, Ajasya akartur atmanah. She's telling. Janma karma cha vishwatman ajasya akartur atmanah teriyang nararishyadasu tadatyanta vidambanam. It's very bewildering, Krishna, to see you in this world. You know, like a president entering into a jail. Prabhupada says, why a president should go into a jail? He just wants to see how the thieves are doing there. Are they getting food and clothing? Are they improving themselves? And he wants to tell them that you can live a more happier life if you come out of the jail. Like that, a president goes into jail. Like that, Krishna comes in this world. So there are many vidambanam verses, series of verses, 3 or 4 verses. Kunti Maharani is speaking. Your behavior is very bewildering, Krishna, to everyone. Like, you know, when Yashoda Maya is taking a stick and chasing after you, there are tears coming out of your eyes mixed with the kajal. When the tears come down, she's saying, that sight is very bewildering to me. How can God be so controlled? So Prabhupada is saying, and Devaki and Kunti are not as fortunate as Yashoda, Prabhupada says. Yashoda is more fortunate. Because Yashoda never was bewildered by Krishna's behavior. Because she never saw Krishna as God. She saw Krishna as only her own child. Whereas Devaki and Kunti saw Krishna as God. So when you see Krishna as God, his behavior can be bewildering. And then in conclusion, Prabhupada says there, generally when we all come to this moment, ISKCON moment, when we are growing devotees, we think, because Krishna is God, I will chant his holy names and I will surrender to him. We think like that. Prabhupada says, this is not the mood of Vrijabhasis. Prabhupada says, Vrijabhasis, their mood is what? They don't know Krishna is God. They only know Krishna as their lover or as their friend or as their child. And because of that, the love is completely spontaneous. They behave with him very naturally. And Prabhupada says that kind of platform is the highest platform. Everyone will achieve one day. By doing sadhana bhakti, we will come to the bhava and prem bhakti one day. Here we find Uddhava. He is finding this, we could see from two angles. One is, he is finding this behavior of Krishna bewildering to him because he still has the Preeti Sankuchit Jnana. Preeti Sankuchit means the full knowledge about Krishna, it stunts one's free flow love towards Krishna. For example, when the sun is up in the sky, can you see stars? You cannot see. When the sun is set in the evening, then you can see the moon and stars. And this example is given by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. He says, when the knowledge about Krishna's supremacy, it hides from a devotee, then the devotee can see the Krishna Chandra, Krishna in his Vrindavan Leela. Then only you can see Krishna and his stars. Krishna and his devotee's behavior very relishable, and one will not be bewildered by Krishna's behavior, playing with covered boys. When the gopis are giving Krishna buttermilk mixed with their tears, and Krishna accepts it. Imagine you give a brahmana, pujari, please offer this buttermilk to Krishna, put a little bit of tears and give him. He will say, now it is muchi now, throw it. Isn't it? Sometimes, whatever you offer has to be completely pure. You know, Raghava Pandit, the servant touched the ceiling. And then when he touched the nariyal, he said, throw it out. Immediately, get another fresh nariyal, he said. So we are so clean, but the gopis are crying tears and the tears are mixed in the buttermilk and they are offering to Krishna and Krishna is drinking it. So in the transcendental platform, there is no shuchi, muchi and all. Like you see, everything is shuchi. The covered boy, Madhumangal is drinking buttermilk and running away from Krishna. And Krishna makes sure, I have to get something from him. And he beats him and water comes out, he drinks. So, this was very bewildering to whom? Brahma. You see, all these people, Brahma, Indra, like Uddhava here, Devaki, they all can get bewildered because anyone who sees Krishna as God can get bewildered by seeing these things. But Yashoda, Nanda and covered boys, covered girls, cows, they never get bewildered by Krishna's behavior because they have attained that platform of spontaneous love. It's called as the difference between reverential admiration and spontaneous affection. So that is one angle. Another angle is, we should not think Uddhava is inferior. We should not think that, see, Uddhava is bewildered, but I am able to understand this. I am better. We may think like that. So we should know that Uddhava is lamenting for the foolish souls who may misunderstand Krishna. Who may misunderstand Krishna. It is very much possible that people can misunderstand Krishna. Like you see in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Bhishma was sending arrows, there was blood coming out of Krishna's body, correct? Many devotees get bewildered when they hear this. They think that, you know, Prabhuji, you said in another day lecture that Krishna's body is Sachidananda, you know, transcendental, spiritual. But now we are finding, you know, blood is coming. So I am getting little doubt whether which is true. The first one you said is true, or maybe Krishna's body is also like our body only. How many of you got this question? First time you heard. Be honest. You heard this? You didn't get this question at all? Really? You are all Mahatmas, all of you. Either you are Mahatmas or you didn't understand it. You really understood. Like Nityananda Prabhu, you know, when he is hit by Jagayamadai, blood is coming, right? If his body is spiritual, then how does the blood come? So the answer is very simple. The answer is given by Prabhupada. He says the Lord's body is made of Atma Maya, you know. He comes in this world through internal potency. So he can manifest whatever he wants. Like, you know, he is manifesting blood in order to increase the sweetness of the pastime. Just like sometimes this Narsingalila they do. When they do Narsingalila, inside Hiranyakashipu's shirt, they keep lot of that red color foils, you know. Long red ribbons they keep inside. So they put some button or something here, you know. And then this fellow who is acting as Narsingadeva, what he has to do? He has to break that button, tak, and pull out those ribbons outside. It's all pre-planned. And he takes out ribbon, you think it's intestine, bloody intestine he's wearing. So it's kept already in advance. Similarly, when Krishna also, you know, he performs this lila, he manifests the blood for the pleasure of whom? Bhishma Pitama. Because it's called Viriras. In Viriras, if he goes on sending arrows, there is no blood coming out, then what is Viriras then? Kshatriya can never be happy. And Krishna tells Bhishma, please don't worry, my body is Sachidananda body, so I can't manifest blood, you know. You know, anyway, you be happy only with the arrows poking my body, but no blood, please. Sorry. If he says, then what is the pastime? So Krishna is manifesting blood to increase the sweetness of the pastime. So we also may get bewildered. Like, you know, one Ramaranjan Das, Prabhu, Prabhupada gave him initiation. After 1 week, he died in a car accident somewhere abroad. And the news went to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada replied back to the devotees. Of course, Prabhupada wrote to his wife, who was a non-devotee. Prabhupada wrote to her, do not worry, your husband was a very noble soul, and he also is initiated, and, you know, he has done a lot of service. Surely he will be put in a situation where he will continue his devotional service, and all that, Prabhupada wrote to her. And then to the devotees, Prabhupada wrote another letter. In that, Prabhupada wrote 5 reasons why Ramaranjan passed away. Prabhupada wrote in that letter. One reason Prabhupada wrote that his wife was not only a non-devotee, she was very much averse to devotion service and devotees. She wanted to pull him away and take him to 1,000 miles away to another place for a job. And she along with her mother and father were trying to take him back from the city. They were trying to change the children's education, everything. So this fellow was very much afraid. And his friend circle was very, very bad circle. They were smokers and drunkards. They were very, very dangerous, vicious association. So they threatened him that you cannot leave us and go away. You have to be with us. Because they thought that the ISKCON people have taken away our good friend. So they wanted to keep him submerged in bad habits. That was like that. Like that, Prabhupada gave 5 reasons. How, and Ramaranjan's financial situation was very bad. That he has to work hard, earn a lot of money. And most of his time was going in that he couldn't devote in devotional service. The Prabhupada gave. Because of all these reasons, Prabhupada said, Krishna thought, here is a sincere soul, and he will not be able to make it in Krishna consciousness. So let me put him in an alternative situation where he can peacefully practice. So Prabhupada could see from a transcendental point of view. You know, Krishna picked him up from here and put him in another family. Now he is born as a new baby now. No anxieties now. And he will become a devotee. And he can chant and dance without any financial crisis, without any bad friendship or, you know, unfavorable wife and all that. So, we should see from a devotional point of view why Krishna does what he does. The contradictions can be resolved by hearing from great souls like Prabhupada. Because one last point I would like to mention is whenever we come across contradictions in scriptures, we should never get bewildered. Okay, you may say, Prabhuji, if you get bewildered, what to do? The first answer is don't get bewildered. Because there is some, you should have a special box called as inconceivable box. You should put that question in the inconceivable hundi. Keep it. So what is, see, if you cannot, like Yashoda Maya was serving Krishna nicely, suddenly Krishna opened his mouth when she asked him to open for seeing the dirt. And she saw the whole Brahmanda in his belly. Huh? She was wondering, outside also Brahmanda, inside Brahmanda, she got bewildered. And when she couldn't resolve the contradiction, what she did? Immediately she offered obeisances. Prabhupada says, this is the right behavior. Prabhupada says, when you get bewildered, surrender. He says, immediately. Go to some superior Vaishnavas, go to Guru, and tell him that, this is something I cannot understand. Please help me to understand it. Just like Arjuna asked Krishna, aparam bhavato janma, param janma vivasvata. He said, how did he give this knowledge to Vivaswan? Ask question. And sometimes even after hearing the answer, still the answer sometimes may not be very satisfactory sometimes. Then you may ask another devotee, you may ask a third devotee. Because sometimes what happens, you ask a question, very complex question, but the answer to that question is also available, but we don't have the necessary realization to digest the answer. Sometimes, you know, boys ask questions from Mahabharata. The question is a very nice question, but if you give answer, they will not be able to accept the answer because they don't have faith, necessary faith for digesting the answer. Nowadays internet is available. Anybody goes anywhere and gets some question from somewhere. You know. So, like for example, Guru is telling you to see the moon. You know, he is showing you the sky, you are looking at the earth.
Where is the moon?
Where the moon? If you are looking at the earth, you can't see the moon on earth, you have to see that. So sometimes the Guru gives a direction. You look at the root of the tree, look at the tree, look at the two branches, and in between the two branches, are you able to see the moon? Then as you exactly look between the two branches, a cloud comes over, you know. And then, where is it you are asking? Then he says, okay, right now you can't understand, wait for some time. No, why should I wait? Either you give me answer right now or I will leave Krishna consciousness. If somebody says he's a fool, because Guru knows now the cloud has come, you won't say, okay, after the cloud goes, now you see. Again, we are looking somewhere else. Where is it? Oh, you see the branches. Between the two branches, then you see the moon. So this is called a Shaka Chandra Nyai, they call it. Between the two Shakas, you see the Chandra. But how does the Guru show the Chandra? He takes many material examples. That's why he shows from the ground, he shows the root, then he shows the tree, then he shows the branch. So Prabhupada would give many, many simple examples to illustrate spiritual points, to resolve the contradictions and help people understand. So, like, you know, one person was asking Prabhupada, Swamiji, as all the rivers ultimately merge into the ocean, people say, you know, you can worship, you know, Sarvadeva Namaskaraha Keshavam Pratikachati. Why can't you worship all the devatas? And then Prabhupada asked, you know, can you put food into any of the holes of the body? Can you put here? Can you put here? Can you put here? Like that he was asking. Prabhupada, there is only one way. What is it only way? You have to put in the mouth. So Prabhupada used many simple examples to resolve the questions very quickly. He would give very nice examples. The contradictions are resolved instantly. So here Uddhava's bewilderment should be understood to be spiritual. But Uddhava is a very, very great devotee. In fact, Krishna calls Uddhava as someone dearer than Lakshmi also. Dearer than Brahma, dearer than Shiva in the 11th canto. He is telling Uddhava, you are so dear to me. So Uddhava is not an ordinary devotee. And he knows the Vraja Bhakti also by association with Vrajavasis. He knows the Vraja Bhakti. He is a student of Brihaspati. He's a very pure soul. And he is speaking, sometimes great devotees speak in ecstasy and we should be careful not to misunderstand them. Like, you know, there is one verse in Bhagavatam, Tata Vairanu Bandena, there is one verse. Narada is telling, oh my Lord, you know, I don't have even a drop of bhakti what Shishupal is having for you. Like that Narada is saying, is that true? He is telling, no bhakta in this world can have bhakti, can have such absorption in Krishna like Shishupal. or Kamsa. He's saying, is that true? He is speaking this in great ecstasy. Sometimes don't misunderstand when people speak in ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking in ecstasy. I have no love for Krishna. And one boy was asking, Prabhuji, you know, after so much hard work, Mahaprabhu achieved love. Now he is saying he has no love. Prabhuji, I am afraid if I also work hard and achieve love, maybe I will not feel any love. Now people may misunderstand. He is saying he has no love. What does that mean? My Lord, his heart is swelling in great love. Now, Krishna Kaviraj Goswami is saying, I am like a worm in the stool. Anybody who takes my name, you know, he will lose all past credits. Is that true? If somebody thinks, you know, then why should I read this book? Will you ask like that? So, sometimes in ecstatic love, a devotee may speak like that. Similarly, here Uddhava is speaking in ecstasy. Oh, my dear Lord, out of fear, you behave as if you are fearful of Kamsa. That is bewildering to the foolish atheists. Foolish people say, hey, see, you are saying Krishna is God. See, he is fearful of Kamsa. You are saying Krishna is God, he is fearful of Yashoda's stick. So, because he is fearful, he is not God. Atheists may say like that. So, he is asking Krishna, why are you behaving like this and showing these confidential pastimes to fools and rascals in this world who may misunderstand you? So, that is another angle we can understand Uddhava's speech like this. And Prabhupada also explains that these kinds of verses are there for us to be able to appreciate Krishna's confidential pastimes. Confidential pastimes of Raja, Vrindavan. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.